I've often said that what becomes part of this forum and part of our worship each week, these are ideas and thoughts and comments that I most need to hear. And since I'm the only preacher I listen to generally, you have to eavesdrop while I'm, in a sense, talking to myself. And this Sunday, more than usual, was why I found Matthew's Gospel, chapter 6, verse 25 and following, so important. This is a text, by the way, I return to at least two or three times a year, so it's not a new thing. Jesus says, "Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor about your body, what you shall put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you of not more value than they? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Let the day's own trouble be sufficient for the day." Yeah, good luck with that. You don't have a meeting at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning in the Texas Tech University Administration Building. I don't get over there that often. Do not be anxious about tomorrow. I found myself at graduation this last Friday. Spent 20 years avoiding that like the plague, and then my boss made me go. So I went. And then, in amongst all the, you know, the conversation and the speeches, there was this little moment that I have to tell you was oddly and I think significantly poignant. Before they call the names and the graduates come forward and receive their diplomas, the provost, who's the chief academic officer of the university, stands at the podium and says to the president, "These gathered graduates have fulfilled requirements for the degree to which they're being honored, and I so present them." And then the president says, "I now declare unto you that you are college graduates." And then they move their tassels from the right side to the left. And they, in that moment, go from student to graduate. And as cynical as I can get about some of this stuff, I found that little moment oddly poignant and thought, well, it was worth coming just for that. And it was. Because it's a moment of transition, in this sense, high drama, but one to which I think we can all oddly relate. I mean, we've all experienced moments of transition where we go from single to married, where we go from not parent to parent, grandparent, and so on. And yet, all of those high drama transitions are simply technicolor versions of what happens to us every single day. Often, when we're asleep, as we go from today until tomorrow, every night at midnight. Again, often when we're asleep, but not always. Because sometimes anxiety keeps us awake, and we see the clock go from yesterday to today to tomorrow. Well, the question is, how do we deal with that anxiety? What enables us to let tomorrow's troubles be sufficient for that, or today's to be sufficient for today? I think a couple of things might help us at least get back to sleep when midnight brings us high anxiety. I think, first of all, it's useful to remember that we've had some practice. We have had some practice dealing with transitions. We've had some practice dealing with even the kinds of things that face us. And at their core, most of the things that make us anxious are the experience of loss, the loss that has just occurred or the loss that is impending. And we've had experiences of loss almost from the moment we can remember. Everybody lost a fish when they were a kid, right? And you had to cope with life and death, literally, but also metaphorically. And all of these little losses, as well as all of the successes we've had, graduating from elementary school, middle school, and so on, and these moments of achievement and glory and success, which sadly, in short order, sort of become yesterday's news, and we have to cope with that lest our egos consume us. So we've had some practice dealing with little losses, and also, the longer we live, some pretty dramatic and devastating losses as well. And we've got more yet to deal with. So how do we deal with it? We learn from our experience. We develop coping skills back from, you know, the fishbowl and the tassel turning and the loss of dreams in the company of those who share that experience. We've had some practice, and we live with people that have been there, and they see us through. Let today's troubles be sufficient for the day. Tomorrow will be another day where we will simply apply what we've learned in the company of the people who've been there with us and who will see us through. Have no anxiety? Well, maybe it helps to know we've had some practice with this. Secondly, I think it's helpful to gain some perspective, because tomorrow looks like this, but it's set into a broader context of both our own lives and also life in general. We went and saw the movie Woman in Gold this last week, the Helen Mirren story, where she portrays an Austrian immigrant, Jewish escapee in a sense, that takes on the Austrian government to recover for her family several hundred million dollars worth of pillaged art that was taken by the Nazis and then seized and held onto by the Austrian government. And just, you know, 20-some years ago, she got it back. She prevailed against the Austrian government, and the painting, Woman in Gold, as well as some others, are now on display in a museum in New York. All of us can go see it. Pretty amazing, really. And it puts into perspective things like, oh, I don't know, tomorrow's meeting and whatever else it is, you know. It gives some perspective to those moments, but also it gives us an opportunity to think about the grand scheme of things. And when I think about this, I go back to an essayist of which I'm particularly fond, and a little book of essays, this an excerpt from his essay on life, the big one. He says, the temptation is always to reduce it to size. Life is a bowl of cherries, a rat race, amino acids. Even to call it a mystery smacks of reductionism. It is the mystery. And then he gives a list of criteria by which we can sort of measure how alive we are or how deeply we understand the perspective of life. He asks rhetorically, have you wept at anything during the past year? And great joy and great sorrow will bring those of us who are alive to tears. Has your heart beat faster at the sight of young beauty, a sleeping six-year-old next to her favorite book and blankie? Have you thought seriously about the fact that someday you're going to die? More than I'd like. Not at all happy about being in the fourth quarter when I think about it that way. On the other hand, if it were not so, if life had no end point, we would be consumed and I think ultimately rendered insignificant by complacency. There's always tomorrow. Well, there isn't always tomorrow, and I think that brings a sense of urgency to share, to grow, and to bring into perspective the value of relationships superseding circumstance. Here's one that calls me up short. More often than not, do you really listen when people are speaking to you instead of just waiting for your turn to speak? I make my living talking, and yet I find myself most alive when I really get what somebody else has to say. And finally, is there anybody you know in whose place, if one of you had to suffer great pain, you would volunteer yourself? Would you absorb, if you could, the pain of one other person? Are you capable of that much love? And do you know people in your life who would do the same for you. The essayist says, if your answer to all or most of these questions is no, chances are you're dead already. Because that is the experience of not just being alive, but of living. To weep, to smile, to ponder, to absorb the love of others. So we maybe have less anxiety. Nobody would say have no anxiety, but have less anxiety by realizing we've been to practice on this stuff, and there is a perspective to bring to bear on even what we face tomorrow. And finally, one other point, and if I had been asked to give the graduation speech this last Friday, this would have been the closing segment. It's actually one you've probably heard before, because I've used it in this context on occasion. But I also use this idea to end every class I teach. It addresses the question, how do we matter? In what way, if any, do each of us change the world? It starts with a story problem off of a physics test. Imagine, if you will, an early morning fishing expedition. One guy, one boat, one fishing rod, one thermos of coffee. Rowing out into the middle of a newly replenished Playa Lake in West Texas. Casting a line, pouring a cup, and just enjoying the sunrise. And then, oddly enough, a fish strikes. And in the course of landing the fish, the coffee winds up in the lake, including the cup. Well, the math problem goes like this. You know the volume of the lake, the temperature of the water. You know the volume of the coffee cup, the temperature of the coffee. And you assume equal mixing, because a miracle happens. By what number of degrees does the lake temperature rise when a cup of coffee is spilled in it? And of course, what's implied is the metaphor that if you had a device sensitive enough to measure it, you could figure that out. But more importantly, if you had a device sensitive enough to measure the impact of one human life, you could detect the degree to which any one life changes the world. Well, that's the setup. The punchline is, I know the device. This is the measuring stick. The measuring stick is compassion. Now, compassion is different from pity, where you look over there and somebody else's sad, sorry life, and you go, that's a sad, sorry life. I'm real sad and sorry about it. As opposed to looking there and understanding to the core of your being that there is no sadness or sorrow that could happen to anybody at any time to which we are immune. We cannot predict the convergence of time and circumstance, and anyone else's life may well be ours, or it may well have been ours. And it's that sense of compassion as it drives our behavior that changes the world. Compassion is the measuring stick by which we matter. Well, applying that takes it to the next level. I think there are defining moments in our lives, all of our lives. There are moments that may, for some, become sort of a prefix or suffix to your name, in a sense. Nobel Prize winner, Olympic gold medalist, and so on. Or, in this instance this week, Amtrak train driver. That guy will be forever known as the guy that derailed the train in Philadelphia. So also, the Hudson River pilot guy that safely landed the plane in the Hudson River a few years ago. That will be his, it will be the first portion of his name. Now, most of us are not so dramatically defined. But a lot of what gives us anxiety is what we remember about a defining day in our lives. And usually this is a day that we would rather forget. My point here is that no one's life can be reduced to what happened on your worst day. And I have no trouble remembering what that was. Similarly, no one's life can be characterized by what happened on your best day. It becomes yesterday's news in pretty short order. But the whole of our lives, and the whole of life in general, is under the care and dominion of the one who said, "Consider the birds of the air, the lilies of the field. Consider, lo, I am with you always. Such that when we graduate from today until tomorrow, we have less anxiety, for the day will take care of what the day will bring, and we're all in this together. Amen.